RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Jayco. Since 1968, Jayco has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories. For more information, visit your local Jayco dealer or head on over to jayco.com.
And by the Thetford Corporation. The industry expert and innovation leader, Thetford has made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. To see a complete lineup of products, visit Thetford.com.
And by Camp Casual. Family-owned and operated since 2014, Camp Casual is committed to bringing retro-inspired dishware and home goods to the camping and RVing community. Visit CampCasual.com to see what fun products you can add to your RV, your campsite, or your home.
And by Cabela's, the world's foremost outfitter. Cabela's has everything you need to get your family into the great outdoors. Visit Cabela's.com to shop for everyone on your Christmas list or to find a store near you.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com. And you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are heading to Mammoth Cave National Park, a popular RV destination and home to the longest known cave system in the world.
Our very own campground correspondent, Casita Dean May, is a local expert on both the national park and the surrounding area. So we went straight to the source and invited him onto the show to give us all the inside scoop.
You might think you know a thing or two about Mammoth Cave, but now it's time for Casita Dean's Inside Scoop. You are listening to episode number 170, Greetings from Mammoth Cave National Park.
Before we head into this week's feature topic, Greetings from Mammoth Cave National Park, it's time for our RV News Minute, which is sponsored by our friends at Camp Casual.
Camping has never, ever, ever been this cool. With the Camp Casual family of products continuing to grow, it's never been a better time to add to your Camp Casual collection. Family-owned and run since 2014, Camp Casual is committed to bringing retro-inspired dishware and home goods to the camping and RVing community. All their dishware is 100% BPA-free, FDA-approved, and dishwasher-safe. Now, Camp Casual has been super-duper generous to our listeners, RVFTA listeners, and has just been throwing out coupon code after coupon code.
Extending them.
It's so friendly of them. And also, a little sneak peek, they're going to be one of our many partners that's giving away something at our Christmas spectacular.
And they're giving away something soft and warm and fluffy.
Like a basket of kittens.
Was that too much of a hint? I'm so excited for our RVFTA Christmas spectacular.
Yeah, and speaking of extending their product line, Camp Casual will any day now be adding more mugs to their already really cool mug collection. There's currently four different styles out there to choose from, and we have all four. Of course we do. We love them. And they're just like, go ahead. You describe the mug.
Well, you'll probably get a news alert on your phone when they finally
yes,
drop.
True.
Well, these are a little different. I think these are a little artsier, yeah, and they're a little bolder in a sense. I mean, a little more modern.
Right.
Like, so, a little less retro, a little more modern. I don't know if that's fair or
not. I don't know. But the thing is that they are completely different, right? So you have your set now, but you may need one or two or three.
If these mugs were coffee, they'd be a dark roast.
All right. So if you follow Camp Casual on their Facebook page, they always post right there on their Facebook page, and then we quickly share it because we love Camp Casual.
And if you don't follow them, that's just a foolish mistake.
Go over there and follow, and then you'll know exactly when the new mugs are available. But for right now, you can still get the ones that have been out this whole year, and they're wonderful too, and they make the perfect gift. $15 price point. Can't beat it.
Okay, so let's do our RV News Minute. So our friends at the Jellystone Camp Resort Organization recently had their annual symposium, and they give out prizes and awards there to their best campgrounds.
Yeah.
I am a big believer in these prizes and awards that Jellystone gives out because I think it creates competition in their network of almost 100 campgrounds.
Well, we've shared also that we actually use the prizes and awards for campgrounds to decide where to go to when we're making our plans.
Whether it's Jellystone or somebody else, yeah, we always look and see, mm-hmm, like the rankings, the reviews, and the internal award systems.
Yeah.
And it's not rigged because not all of the campgrounds get the awards.
Yeah.
I mean, you just have to look in their catalog and you see it's not the case. So this year's winner was the Tabor City Jellystone in North Carolina. It's about a half hour north of Myrtle Beach, and then it's also fairly close to Wilmington, North Carolina.
Yeah, my Google Maps says 50 minutes. So, you know, it's one of those situations where it may be good. I was thinking this might be if you're planning your trip from the north to the south, if you're going down to one of the South Carolina state parks or something, or maybe returning home, right? You do a state park in South Carolina and then go to the Jellystone and have like a wonderful water park kind of experience. This is the Jellystone experience that you hear about, right? This is the water parks. It has three different pools. It has all the mini golf and the activities. It has it all there.
Yeah, if you're coastal North or South Carolina, this is definitely worth a visit. We've been reading really good reviews for this one for years, and it's not surprising that they won the Camp Resort of the Year this year, if you ask me.
Yeah, and we really want to get there, but also a little tip for any of you. There's a blog post on the Camp Jellystone blog that rounds up all of the campgrounds that won awards at this symposium this year. I'm going to link to that blog post in the show notes for this episode, because no matter where you are in the country, it would be great for you to look at that list and maybe see if there's one of these Jellystones that has been awarded something. It's a standout Jellystone.
And this year they gave four awards per region, and then they had the overarching winner,
right,
which was this Tabor City Jellystone, yeah, which we're going to have to visit in the next year.
Yep. So there might be one near you that is award winning and you should check it out. All right.
I am beyond excited that we nabbed Casita Dean May for both episodes this week. So on RVFTA's Campground of the Week, he's reviewing the Mammoth Cave Jellystone. And on this episode, he is going to break down everything you want to do when you visit Mammoth Cave National Park and all the things you want to do in the surrounding area. Casita Dean is a superstar.
So stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are really excited to start our big Greetings from Mammoth Cave National Park episode with Casita Dean May. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Jayco.
With the 2018 Greyhawk Classy Motorhome, the journey is sure to be as smooth as the destination is fun. Engineered for superior on-the-road performance and loaded with residential amenities and covered by Jayco's two-year limited warranty, Greyhawk makes every mile enjoyable. Visit your local Jayco dealer or Jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun.
And a huge welcome to the show for Casita Dean May,
a
fan favorite.
Hi, Dean.
Hey there. How are you guys?
Oh, we're good. And we're even better right now because we have such an expert on Mammoth Cave National Park. We've really been wanting to do this episode for a while because this is a huge destination for people. It's on a lot of people's bucket list, and we knew that you were the one to call because, well, you've got some street cred. Do you want to give everybody your credentials for reviewing this national park?
This is old stomping grounds here.
Yeah. Mammoth Cave is just about 40 miles north of Bowling Green, so it's easy to get to. And, you know, I have two young adult daughters now that are 23 and 20, but since they were toddlers, I would take them on hiking trips up to Mammoth Cave. Sometimes, you know, I'd give Laura a break on the weekend. I'd take the minivan up with the two girls. And in fact, I got in over my head a time or two, taking maybe a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old on a hike, and I'd end up with one of them on my back carrying them out. But we had a good time.
I love this image of you giving Laura a break by taking your children into a dark cave underground.
Well,
perfect.
Hey, yeah. That's how he rolls. All right. So this is 40 miles away from Bowling Green. Why don't you situate everybody else with the rest of the geography? Where is Mammoth Cave National Park?
Okay. It is very easy to find and located very conveniently off of Interstate 65. So it's basically about 90 miles north of Nashville, Tennessee, or 90 minutes south of Louisville, Kentucky. And if you're coming from Nashville, you'd want to take exit 48. If you're coming from Louisville, you'd want to take exit 53.
All right. Now, you had some recommendations for people, and of course he does. He's all about the research, folks. You had some recommendations for sort of pre-research that, you know, learning about the caves before you go. And it seems to me like that's an important part of a visit to Mammoth Cave.
Yeah, this is really one of these cool areas where you can really get geared up before you leave home for a trip like this. And again, I'm on faculty at Western Kentucky University, and we actually have a center called the Western Kentucky University Center for Cave and Karst Studies. And there's also the Mammoth Cave Karst Geology. And I've given you a couple of websites, and you can go to those websites and study about the cave and learn its wonderful history, both geologically as well as culturally, and it is a fascinating history. So I would encourage folks to do a little bit of homework on the cave itself before they make their trip.
And we'll put a bunch of these links into the show notes, because as Stephanie said, PhD has given us all kinds of good ways. And I think a lot of us like to get excited about a trip beforehand, and doing a little research can be incredibly helpful. And there's so many different options for how you explore this national park. So why don't you give us some of that history, some of those interesting facts about Mammoth Cave National Park?
Okay, here's just some quick history and facts. The park itself is about 53,000 acres. It was discovered by Native Americans about 4,000 years ago. It was rediscovered in the late 1700s, and it was mined by slaves for saltpeter during the War of 1812. They started giving tours as early as 1816. It became a national park in 1941, and since then has also been designated as a World Heritage Site and an International Biosphere Reserve Area.
I think Olympic National Park has both of those categorizations as well, from what I remember this past summer.
It really is. I mean, to tell the truth, it's kind of like one of those seven wonders of the natural world. One of the other statistics here is just amazing. The next one here, they have mapped over 400 miles of passages through that particular cave. And a couple of other things, they have like 130 different species that live in or around the cave. And what's really cool, they have 12 species that are eyeless or have no skin pigmentation. So we have shrimp, fish, crayfish, beetles, things like that, that live inside the cave. And since it's pitch dark, they don't need skin pigmentation and they don't need eyes.
It's like another planet to me. I mean, it sounds like you're literally describing something from Mars or Jupiter. I mean, this is pretty wild.
Right. When you go on some of these cave tours, that's exactly how it feels. You feel as if you're in a different world. The other thing that's cool about the caves, but in some ways is also kind of sad, is 150 years ago, they estimated there were probably 9 to 12 million bats of different species that lived inside the cave. But just because of the modern world we live in, that's probably only a few thousand bats today. And there's also something called white nose syndrome that everybody should study a little bit when you go into caves that are inhabited by bats, because it's decimating the bat populations. And one of the things you have to do after a tour is you have to walk across something called a biosecurity mat to make sure that you would not take that fungus and spread it somewhere else where it could, further decimate the bat population, which it's no big deal. You finish your tour, you walk 20 feet across a mat, and it basically decontaminates your shoes.
You know, I'm so grateful. I have to just say that it's great that there are people within the national park system doing all of this research and scientific endeavor to try to protect, what is left of these bat species and just try to stop, right, this from spreading further. I mean, when I just think about somebody coming up with the biosecurity mat process, it really does touch me.
We did this at Mount St. Helens when we went into the lava tunnels. And like you said, Dean, it's so quick and easy to make sure that your shoes aren't contaminated. Somebody had to do that research to figure that out, but it doesn't take away from the experience at all.
Right. And if you think that this park will get about 650,000 people will visit the park, including 400,000 people that will take cave tours. And if you take those 400,000 and multiply it by 2 feet, that's 800,000 feet that need to be decontaminated to make sure that you can maintain these what's left of our bat population.
Well, that was a great cliff notes on Mammoth Cave National Park.
I would not call them cliff notes because we're talking to a university professor who might be offended by such things. That was a good PhD dissertation. Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, there was a lot of surprises there. I didn't know it was as old of a park.
No, that was great.
I just learned some things.
When can you go see the park? Like, what are the operating hours for Mammoth Cave National Park?
And basically during peak season, it's open 7 days a week from 8 in the morning until 6:30 in the evening. So it's open almost all the time, other than like maybe Christmas and Thanksgiving. But other than that, it's open and available during the off season. They'll shut down a little earlier in the afternoon. But basically, I assume that most folks are going to be coming during peak season. So 7 days a week, 8 a.m. to 6:30.
Now, I did want to point out that one of the reasons why we're running this episode during the off season is that some people, you know, do like to visit Mammoth Cave during the off season because the caves are consistent temperature no matter what time of year. So there's not a lot of places that you can visit in the winter and kind of go underground and get warmer weather, you know, but you can go down there and get in that 50 degree range, even when it's winter and cold outside. So that's kind of cool.
Right. It's mid-50s. I should know. It's an exact temperature year round. I should know that, but it's somewhere in that mid-50s, plus or minus a degree or two.
We'll give you a pass. All right. Now, most people like to think about camping in a national park when they visit, but we need to know the camping situation in this park is a little different.
Oh, it's very different. You do have a lodge there that's nice, but you're going to have limited accommodations there. It's not that large. They do have a campground. It's a beautiful campground, but it's a primitive campground. So for someone like Laura and I, we can't really camp there very well because, one, I don't have a furnace in my little casita, or I do. I have a cube heater, but I don't have propane, and it also doesn't have water hookups. And Laura and I, we only have 10 gallons of fresh in our casita. So really what I think a great option is, you know, the Mammoth Cave Jellystone, and it's located just 4 miles down the road from the national park. And that is a wonderful campground for folks that would like to do the national park and then extend it into a family vacation with the Jellystone.
And now is a great time to mention that Casita Dean is also going to be on, has already been on, Campground of the Week this week. So we're pairing these episodes. So this episode is all about Mammoth Cave National Park. If you head over to our Campground of the Week podcast, Dean is going to give us a great review of that Jellystone that he mentioned, and that really is one of your primary options for camping in that area. So head over and check out that episode as well. Now, Dean, are there any options for eating in the park, like actually inside the park?
Yeah, you do have a couple of options there. They have something called the Spelunkers Cafe, and that's also an ice cream parlor. And then you also have the Green River Grill. So if you can go into the park, pack a picnic, take your food with you. But, you know, sometimes it's just nice to grab an ice cream or a quick sandwich or something like that. So you do have nice eating options inside the park, just adjacent to the visitor center.
Now, we're going to keep people in suspense for a little bit longer on the cave part, and let's just quickly go over some of the other things to do within this national park. There are other things to do besides explore
caves.
Frankly,
I'm fascinated to hear this part from you because, I mean, we all know about the caves, but there's a whole national park above ground here, too. So take us there, Dean.
Right. And again, it's the national park is 53,000 acres. And again, me being kind of the obsessive compulsive guy that I am, I always like to start out with the visitor center. Like, for example, if we go to the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, that's always a good way to get your visit going is through the visitor center. They renovated that in 2012, so I remember what it was like prior to that, and they have done an outstanding job. And if you're not careful, you could spend a half a day in the visitor center. But in addition to that, you can do hiking. They've got 84 miles of hiking trails. There are bike trails. You can do there's a lot of horseback riding as well. You have to remember, in the state of Kentucky, we love our horses, so they have 60 miles of horseback trails. There's also abundance in terms of rivers and lakes, so you can do fishing and canoeing. And the other thing that I like, and you just go into this visitor center and you meet such wonderful park rangers, and they have a full slate of activities with the park rangers. They have a schedule. You can do coffee with a park ranger or porch.
Just stop there. Let's just ponder that for a second. Coffee with a national park ranger. Like, I've died and gone to heaven.
Right,
I mean, there's nothing
right.
I would rather do than have a nice hot cup of coffee and chat with a park ranger.
And that's what they do. You get now, not everybody's going to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning for coffee, but what a great time to just take your kids, grab a cup of coffee, and you get 10, 12, 15 people just sort of sitting around in a circle, chatting with the park ranger about this wonderful cave in the national park.
I just have to bluntly ask you a question here. Is the above ground portion of the park spectacular, or is really the whole show the caves and then it's just sort of pretty and nice above ground? I mean, let's say you were somebody that did not want to go into the caves because you're frightened by being in small spaces. I mean, is the above ground area a draw in its own right?
I would say that it's a draw in its own right. It is a beautiful area for anyone that likes to hike and do outdoor activities. But, Mammoth Cave is a natural wonder. It is otherworldly. So it's kind of one of those things. I mean, you've got to do the cave. But if something happens and you are scared of the dark or you're scared of closed spaces or whatever the case may be, there's still plenty for you to do. But there's lots of beautiful above ground areas to see in our wonderful country. But there are beautiful caves out there, but there's only one Mammoth Cave.
Now, Dean, did your girls do the Junior Ranger programs growing up, or is that something they never really got into?
No, we never really exposed them to that. And again, Laura and I, who we've had such wonderful memories, raising our girls and taking them on vacations. But Laura and I, we didn't discover this whole RVing campground thing until just 3 or 4 years ago. And I really wish we would have, because I just think it's something that my girls would have enjoyed and I would have enjoyed exposing them to.
But frankly,
they do have the program there, right, at the Mammoth
Cave? Yes, they do. So,
frankly, I like that you have all this pent up passion and joy for the RVing lifestyle, because you just spread that enthusiasm to our listeners in such a wonderful way. So anything else above ground before you take us below ground?
Well, and again, they do have a variety of other ranger activities. They have one called the Porch Talk or the Heritage Walk. And again, they have the Junior Ranger Nature Track. They also have some little hikes that you can take with a ranger. And they also have some evening programs at the amphitheater that's on site. But again, your primary reason for going to Mammoth Cave National Park, in addition to it being a beautiful national park, is to check out and do one or more of the cave tours.
Okay, so that's what we're going to dive into now. Now, I can't stress this enough, and I'm sure, Dean, you're going to back me up on this. A lot of people get disappointed when they arrive at Mammoth Cave National Park because they haven't done that research in advance and booked the cave tour that they thought they could just walk into, right?
Right. And in fact, I've done this myself, but again, it's no big deal for me. I live 35 miles from there, but there have been times I've taken the girls up. I was going to maybe do a quick tour, do a little bit of hiking, put a picnic in between. And the tours that we had the time to do and that would be easy enough to take the kids on, they were closed for the day. They had already booked out. So I would highly recommend making sure that you reserve your cave tours, and you can do that online. You be careful. Don't do it. If you're going to just say you're going to be at the Jellystone in the morning, you're going to go do a cave tour, you're going to book it real quick. You cannot book the day of the tour. So
you have to book in advance, as in prior to 24 hours before.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, let's go into
that
these.
That's important, folks. Don't ignore that.
Well, I think we know people that showed up and couldn't get in.
I've heard that a lot.
So, Dean, you got to break this down for us because there are a lot of options and not all of them are going to be good for everybody. So walk us through these cave tours and kind of recommend who should do what tour based on how adventurous you are or how strenuous the tour is.
Right. And they do a great job with their website, describing, you know, what makes up the particular tour. And I've been on probably three or four different tours, and I've probably been on those three or four tours more than one time. But most of the time for Laura and I, it was about we had kids with us, so we wanted to be a little careful. Like one of the popular tours is called the Mammoth Passage Tour. It's about 75 minutes, 3/4 of a mile, 160 stairs. It's rated as easy. It's just $7 for adults and just $5 for kids. The other thing is, that's a tour that you cannot reserve. It's day of sale tickets only. So that's kind of nice for the folks that are just kind of showing up and they didn't know that they're going to have to reserve. So there are some tours that are just for the day of sale tickets only. So that's nice.
Are there any other tours that you would kind of rate or that Mammoth Cave National Park rates as easy?
Yes, and another wonderful one is you get to see it's called the Frozen Niagara Tour. And if you can imagine a waterfalls frozen, except in this case, it's basically frozen in stone. It's what a waterfalls would look like if it was made out of stone. And again, it's only 75 minutes, only 1/4 of a mile, only 12 stairs. It's easy. It's $13 for adults and $8 for kids.
So both of those really are your entry-level tours for somebody who wants something pretty basic, not too frightening, and not too rigorous.
Right. And then I have some tweener tours, and then I have, if you really want to go all out crazy, there's some wonderful tours as well.
All right. So talk about the tweener tours, like maybe if you have teenagers or, 12-year-olds who are adventurous.
Right, and that would be the historic tour, 120 minutes, 2 miles of hiking inside the cave, 440 steps, moderate difficulty, $14 for adults, $9 for kids. They have another one, Domes and Dripstones Tour, again, 120 minutes, 3/4 of a mile, 500 steps. It's a moderate degree of difficulty, about $15 for adults and $10 for kids. And one other one that I'd like to mention is they even have an accessible tour. So in terms of a wheelchair or whatever, you can even do a cave tour. So you can do the Mammoth Cave accessible tour. It'd be about 120 minutes. It's about a half a mile, no stairs, and it's easy and accessible to just about everyone. And it would be $20 for adults and $14 for kids.
Now, as you're mentioning this accessible tour, I'm also thinking of restrictions on kid hiking backpacks and strollers. And I know that the website is really clear for each of those tours on whether you can have a stroller or whether you can have a backpack with a kid in it on these tours. So for our parents with younger kids, do your research on that also.
Yeah, now, Dean, from what you know, and I don't mean to put you on the spot here, do any of those that you've mentioned that are easy or moderate, you're not going to be crawling on any of those tours,
no.
Are you? Okay.
No. The toughest thing that you would do is be maybe going down some steps, and you might have to turn sideways to get in between the rock formation. But so no, everything I've mentioned up to this point would be doable, and you're not getting down on your hands and knees. But there is that opportunity if you would like to do that.
Take us there, Dean. Take us there.
I don't know if I want to do that.
I don't know. I don't know either. But I'm curious to see. First of all, if you did them and what you think.
No, I have not done them because, again, anytime I was for the last 20 some years that I've been up there, it's always with kids. But if you want, they do have something called the Grand Avenue Tour. It's 4 hours inside the cave, 4 miles inside the cave, 700 stairs, very strenuous, about $26 for adults and $19 for youth. And then they have the granddaddy of all tours. It's called the Wild Cave Tour. You have to be 16 years old or older to do this. You are in the cave for 6 hours.
I have to be honest. I have no desire for that.
No.
Even because of it being frightening. I just don't want to be in a cave for six hours.
Oh, well, and if you heard what you've got to do with this, it's 5 miles, much of which not only are you on your hands and knees, you are wearing overalls with special shoes, a helmet, and you are on your belly crawling between crevices, and it's rated as extremely strenuous, and it's about $55 for that tour. So it is not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, I got stuck on an elevator today during a power outage, and I stayed calm. I didn't panic.
But it took all your effort.
But it took all my effort not to panic. I was in a very old building in a very old elevator. I don't think I want to be on my hands and knees for that long, frankly.
No, that's cuckoo. You know what I think? In the Rock the Park episode on Mammoth Cave National Park, I think they did one of these
knowing Colton and Jack, they probably did.
And I think it raised my blood pressure just watching it on TV.
And that's a great tip there, too, to check out that episode of Rock the Park for some good video of this cave. So, Dean, which one is your personal favorite? Or if, like, you were to take us next week, which one would you take us on?
And again, probably the highlight for me was when my girls were younger and we were going up there. And it would be the first few that I mentioned. The Mammoth Passage Tour is very nice. The Frozen Niagara Tour is wonderful. And then as my girls got a little older, when I say older, they were probably still in the single digits, maybe, 9 and 6 or 10 and 7. Doing the historic tour is really, really nice. Or even the Domes and Dripstones tour. So depending on the age of the kids or how old someone may be in the family, because any of those tours would be quite nice.
Now, you could do a multiple day trip to Mammoth Cave National Park and do one of these a day? Or do you think that after 2 or 3 days like that would be enough? I mean, how many days should you spend on a trip to Mammoth Cave National Park?
Oh, I think that if you're just there for the caves, 2-3 days would be plenty. And then if you wanted to also include other aspects of the park, probably 3, 4, even 5 days, particularly given if you're going to be at the Jellystone, which has so much to offer, then you can, just turn it into a full blown, 5, 7, 10 day vacation.
I love how Dean is totally down with Yogi Bear.
I know, and
I have to say, I'm just totally geeked out and thrilled that we sent you there for that. Now, you have some other cool resources to get some more information on Mammoth Cave National Park, which we'll link to in the show notes. But can you give us a couple more recommendations, a blog that you like?
Right. And this is kind of one of those things that and you know me, I'm all in on this this RVing campground activities that we've been into. So I do lots of research. I spend all my discretionary time. It's going to be something related to RVing and camping. But I came across a blog, and it's the name of the blog is The Adventures of Trail and Hitch: Two Geeks, Two Cats in an Airstream. And they do such great work. And they recently visited Mammoth Cave in the National Park, probably in August or September. And I just looked at some of their pictures and read their narrative, and there's just no way I could duplicate it. So I just thought I would provide a couple of links so people could – and that's another great resource for studying the history, the culture, and the geology of the cave, as well as looking at some spectacular pictures.
Dean,
great. We'll have all those links in the show notes, guys. It's all there. Don't panic.
That was wonderful. Now we're going to take a break and come back in a second, and Dean is going to talk about some of the regional highlights, some other cool things to do in the area. And there are many cool things to do in the area, so stay tuned. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for segment 2 of our Greetings from Mammoth Cave National Park episode with Casita Dean May. And he's going to talk about all the cool regional highlights, and there are many of them. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Thetford.
Thetford is the industry expert and innovation leader, and they have been making RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. Now, if you are one of the many listeners out there that are going to become new RV owners over the course of the next few months.
And we have a new owner on our forum who just bought a casita, but that's a whole other topic.
You may need a Titan Premium sewer kit. If you're Jeremy, you're going to need that. If you're Jeremy, you say that this is an okay gift to put under the Christmas tree also.
I think it's a great gift to put under the Christmas tree.
All right. So the Titan Premium sewer hose comes in 10-foot, 15-foot, or 20-foot lengths. It is the toughest, longest lasting, and the best value sewer hose on the market. It has a nifty adapter with a handle that you particularly like.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit cleaner. It's a little bit more sanitary. That handle makes it a little bit easier to, you know, to screw into the sewer hookup at the campground. I think it works pretty well.
Yes. So it's our favorite sewer hose of choice. To check out all the different options for evacuating those tanks, head over to Thetford.com.
And it's also, it's green, and I kind of like that it's green. It's like the only one out there that's green.
The color green, not environmentally green.
All right, Dean, welcome back to the show, and thank you so much for taking us into the caves. We really, really enjoyed that.
Oh, that was one. It was exciting for me to have the chance to do that. And again, like I said, it takes me back the last 20 years spending time with the girls there.
Now, this is your stomping ground. This is your home base. So we are really excited to hear about all of your recommendations for other things that people can do in the area. Can you just start by mentioning some of the other caves that are around? Because it's not just the caves in the national park. You can go on other tours too, right?
Oh, right. And again, you have South Central Kentucky, from a geological standpoint, is nothing but caves. And at some point, we'll talk a little bit about the Corvette Museum. We actually had the floor in the museum collapsed and swallowed up four or five vintage Corvettes. Which made the national news.
And it was videoed, but by the security camera, right?
Yes, it was.
That was crazy. I saw that. I'm so glad you brought that up because I thought I was imagining that I had seen that a couple years back.
No, so we have lots of what we call karst formations and caves. So if you're a family that's really into exploring caves, I mean, it's not just Mammoth Cave. There's also other public and private caves, like, for example, Cub Run Cave, Diamond Caverns, Hidden River Cave, Onyx Cave, Outlaw Cave, and I'm sure many others in the surrounding area.
Are there a top pick among those that you've actually enjoyed and would say, if you're going to go to one, go to this one? Because it's a lot. It's almost kind of overwhelming.
I probably would lean a little toward Diamond Caverns, and I haven't been to all of these, or Onyx Cave. Both of those are quite nice.
Now, Dean, this kind of area, right? We know national parks kind of tend to attract those surrounding tourist trappy kind of things, right? People are enough of hiking and everything. We need to go play mini golf or something. So I'm sure that this area has its fair share of those things, and you're going to help us sort through the riffraff. Which of those, you know, area activities are worth a visit?
Okay. Now you're going to, as soon as you get off the interstate on I-65 at, say, exit 53, and you're going to go west toward the cave, you're immediately going to get into some places that have probably been there for decades, at least the 60s, if not longer. But I have to admit, you know, I've spent the time with the kids. And of course, I have my brother and his wife and his kids would come up and visit. And we had summers where we get all of us together and just do a staycation, hang out at the house and go explore Mammoth Cave and some of the different things. Like for example, when you get ready to get off the interstate, there will be a ginormous Tyrannosaurus Rex, which is the highlight that they're trying to show for Dinosaur World. So as soon as you get off the interstate, you can take in Dinosaur World. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, what's that going to be like? And so, you know, my brother and I decided to take our four kids and go to Dinosaur World. We had a blast. I mean, life-size replica of dinosaurs. And it's really pretty cool. And it's kind of one of those things that's not super, super expensive. It's probably $9 for kids, $12.50 for adults. And it's a nice way to spend 2 or 3 hours, you know, maybe a late morning before lunch or maybe after lunch. So I would recommend Dinosaur World as a cool place to spend a half a day.
Okay, Dean, so after you spend an afternoon or a day or two at Dinosaur World, where should we go next?
Another area just adjacent to or really, really close to Dinosaur World is a place called the Kentucky Action Park. And they got a variety of things. It's a little touristy. It can cost you a little bit of money because you're buying things on a per-ticket basis, and they also have horseback riding. But I have to say the one thing that I absolutely love there is something called the Alpine Slide, where you take a sky lift up to the top of this steep hill, and you get on this really cool slide, and you just go down this Alpine Slide, and you will have to use your brakes because you gain so much speed going down. And if you just want to do that, you know, a time or two, no big deal. If you see enough there that could entertain you, you can get a wristband for $29.95. So I would leave it up to the family to decide whether it justifies the $29.95, but spend the $5 and get at least one ticket to the Alpine Slide and come down that puppy. It's a lot of fun.
Now, that's so funny because Carrie Cox, I can't remember where it is, but somewhere where she traveled. That's what I thought it was, Gatlinburg, where she traveled with her family. She said that was their favorite touristy thing to do was the Alpine
yes.
Slide. And I've never been on one, so now I feel like it has to be on my list.
I think Max and Theo would totally love it.
All right. Yeah, the next time I see an Alpine Slide, we're doing it.
Now, it's not a Casita Dean May episode without some kind of barbecue recommendation working its way in. So we're hungry after crawling around in the caves. Where do we want to go and eat?
Okay, but real quick, I also want to mention Kentucky Down Under, which is just north of Mammoth Cave, and it's a small zoo that specializes in Australian animals. And, you know, given the whole play on caves, Down Under, Australia, the land of Down Under, it's worth checking out. So check out the Kentucky Down Under.
And you're saying that with no hint of irony.
None. So, but after you do Kentucky Down Under and you're coming back to the park or back to your campsite, in terms of barbecue, right there at exit 53 is a nice family place called Bucky B's Barbecue. So been there, done that, and they do Kentucky barbecue quite well.
Do you have a favorite dish you recommend?
No, wait. Doesn't Dean get the same thing every time he eats barbecue?
Yeah.
I know.
she just totally outgunned me.
Come on, Jeff.
I remember you saying that you always get the same thing, but I don't remember what it is.
There is one qualification here. If it's just me, it's always pulled pork, beans, and slaw. That is the benchmark. If Laura's with me, which, you know, again, most of the time, I always do the sampler platter and we share it. That way she gets the pulled pork and I get everything else.
You guys are kind of adorable. I have to say, just say that.
Life goals.
All right. Now, Bowling Green is just 30 minutes away, right? So, again, lots of stuff to do in Bowling Green. Can you take us there?
Yes. I mean, and this is Bowling Green. I've been here since 95. It's been a wonderful small city to raise our kids in. And, you know, again, I work at the university. Now, this may sound strange because it's really not that big, but actually in the state of Kentucky, Bowling Green is our third largest city in the state. And we're still only about 60,000 people. So other than Louisville and Lexington, Bowling Green is the next largest city. We're big enough that we have sort of one of everything. So about a decade or so ago, they built a second Walmart. So now we even have two Walmarts. But
60,000 people, man. I'm a Jersey boy. Like, there's like 60,000 people on my block.
Right. So it really is a nice small city. And let me also mention, and may mention this again a little later, in terms of restaurants, because we're surrounded by 27 rural counties that sort of represents a cross-section of America, Bowling Green at one point had more restaurants per capita than any city in the United States other than San Francisco, California.
Boom. That's cold research, folks.
And this is the only podcast in America where you're going to get that piece of information.
All right. Now, Dean, you gave us a little bit of an itinerary, like a sample itinerary for a couple of days in Bowling Green. So I think that that's a great way to share some of your recommendations. Why don't you go for it?
Okay. So here, you can actually come to Bowling Green a couple of days. So again, if you got a family vacation going here, there's enough going on in Bowling Green. Like maybe on day one, we have a small amusement park that is so nice. It's called Beach Bend. And it's also, it's an amusement park and a water park. Park all rolled into one, but it's very easy. And if you go through the week, there's virtually no lines most of the time. Yeah, it may get still a little crowded at certain peak seasons, but they have a wonderful roller coaster, a number of other rides, and then the water park that goes along with it. So you could take one day and just spend the whole day hanging out at the water park and the pool and then doing the rides. And they have a full-fledged wooden roller coaster. It's not on that epic grand scale, but still for those kids that are starting to work their way into roller coasters, a great small roller coaster.
Sounds like a slice of Americana to some degree.
Yes, definitely. Ironically, I lived in Bowling Green for a year when I was like 6 or 7 years old. So I have memories of going to Beach Bend in the late 60s. And it kind of died off. You could go to Beach Bend for – it cost you a dime. Now it costs you a little more than that. But it's sort of recreated itself and reinvented itself. And it is really a nice place to go. Other things that you could do on a second day is you could go to the Corvette Museum. You could go to Lost River Cave, which is located right here in Bowling Green. We have a historic rail park. We also, I have to put a plug in because I know how much all of us campers like ice cream. We have a place called Cheney's Dairy Bar that is basically, it's a dairy farm that is marketing itself as a ice cream place. And you can go in and get a great little lunch and top it off with some amazing ice cream. And I have to tell you, they have literally the best chocolate ice cream that I've ever eaten.
I want to go there. And I really, the Corvette Museum, that's a pretty major, if you're into cars, I mean, that's a pretty major stop on a trip.
It's iconic. You know, we have Corvettes. It's kind of one of those things. There's lots of different sports cars that I used to want to own, and now I just want to own a big truck instead to haul a trailer.
Same.
But, you know, hey, and when you're here on the weekends in the summer, there is something car-related every weekend. There is the Buick Grand National Week. There's the Muscle Car Weekend. There's Vintage Dragster Weekend. I mean, there's all kinds of things. You know, find you a burger joint along one of the main thoroughfares, sit outside and just watch. I think at one point I remember counting something like 95 Corvettes all turning at this particular corner. It was, you know, some type of Corvette weekend. So if you like cars, it is an amazing place to hang out in the summer. We have cruise ins all over town on the weekends. It's lots of fun.
Now, Stephanie likes a nice beer after a long day of crawling around in the caves or visiting the Corvette Museum. So can you recommend somewhere for some good brews?
Okay. We have a place that is really wonderful food, great atmosphere. And they do beer as well, as you know, because it is such a renaissance time in terms of beer in America when we have what's called White Squirrel Brewery. And you may wonder why we call it White Squirrel Brewery. It's because we have white squirrels in Bowling Green. They are not albino squirrels. They are white squirrels. There was like a biology professor a few decades ago, I guess. I don't know what he did, but probably had maybe a few too many beverages and decided to breed white squirrels. And then he released them into Bowling Green, and there are white squirrels all over town. You don't see them out in the wild, though, because white squirrels don't do real well out in the wild. They're real easy to find by hawks. But
yeah, not very camouflaged there.
I love these little towns that are college towns that have just that extra quirkiness to them because of all you crazy academics that live around there.
He released
the squirrels into Bowling Green. And there is a children's book about this, right? Because if there's not, I think we need to write
one. You're going to write it.
yeah, there's a lot out about the white squirrels in Bowling Green. green. Now, and really even the university, you know, where the our mascot is Big Red, but we've even taken on, and there are white squirrels all over campus. So it really is pretty neat.
Now, Dean, I don't want to root for the white squirrels. I want to root for the Bowling Green Hot Rods. So tell me what that's all about.
Oh, and that's just kind of one of those things. Hey, insider tip here. Go to a Bowling Green Hot Rods game. It's a single A baseball affiliate with the Tampa Bay Rays. Buy the $5 grass, you know, sit in the grass area, and then go sit in the $10 seats. So, and what a great way just to grab a hot dog. They have a pretty good beer selection. We even have, there's an area there. We, not just the, you know, the non-premium stuff, but we have a booth that specializes in craft beer. So get a good craft beer, a hot dog, and enjoy a Bowling Green Hot Rods game.
Now, Dean, I got to ask you, I've been to a lot of minor league games, and there are minor league parks like our Lakewood Blue Claws that are very family friendly. And then there are minor league parks like the Asheville Tourists on Thirsty Thursday night that I probably would not want to take my kids to. How does this minor league team straddle that line? Is it a party thing, or is it a family thing, or does it just depend on the night?
It's a family.
Okay,
it is
great.
A great family environment. I didn't think we'd be able to support a single A team here in Bowling Green, but I was so wrong. And it is a wonderful, and they finish all of the home games with a wonderful fireworks display, and it's a lot of fun. But I have one other little tidbit I have to share with you here. Of course, you know the reason why we're called the Bowling Green Hot Rods. We're the home of we manufacture Corvettes here, and Bowling Green attracts that car nut population that we were talking about just a few minutes ago. But there was a big issue on what we were going to call our team. Of course, the Hot Rods won out. The other option was, and my daughter Claire was really pulling for this, and to be honest, I was too. We kind of wanted it to be the Bowling Green Cave Shrimp.
That would make a better base. That would make a better baseball cap.
Yeah.
Well, and that was close. You can still go into their gift shop, and they printed up Bowling Green Cave Shrimp T-shirts.
Brilliant.
So you can still buy a T-shirt, even though we became the Hot Rods instead.
Oh my God! I want one of those.
Love minor. Love minor baseball.
When are we going to Kentucky to see Cassita Dean and Laura?
Road trip.
I can't wait. Gosh, there's just too many great places to go in this big, beautiful country of ours. All right. Anything else in Bowling Green?
Oh, I've probably missed something. Let me see if I think we've done a pretty good job covering things.
I think you were thorough. Well, thorough, of course, as you are with everything. Thank you so much. I really wanted this episode out there on the RVFTA Podcast Network.
Yeah.
This is a popular destination, and I think it's a little different than the typical national park trip that you plan. So
I do see a lot of people on our forum who are fans of Mammoth Cave, and I see a lot of people that want to go. It seems to be like a bucket list destination for RVFTA families.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that we have this episode in the can, and this can be a resource for our listeners for years to come. Thank you so much, Dean.
Thank you, Dean.
Well, you are welcome. Welcome. So come spelunking in South Central Kentucky.
We will. All right.
Thank you, Dean. We'll see you at the campground.
All right. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. A big thank you to Cassita Dean May for that really terrific, informative segment on Mammoth Cave National Park. I think that people will listen to that for years to come if they're planning a Mammoth Cave trip.
We love it when we make these what are called like evergreen episodes. And we just think these episodes will help people who are planning trips, you know, way in the future. But this information really is solid for a long time. These aren't just like fly-by-night recommendations.
I almost feel like we're making little audiobooks when we do an episode. Like this, frankly.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the world sees it that way.
We have some really exciting RVFTA news in a second, but first we have a sponsored message from our friends at Cabela's.
Cabela's is the world's foremost outfitter, and they have everything your family needs to get into the great outdoors. Now, this year, Cabela's brought our family into the world of Gore-Tex.
We had never bought Gore-Tex. We've been cheaping out on Gore-Tex for years.
Yeah, you look at the price point, you go, oh, no, I'll just get the cheaper
thing. But I'll give Cabela's credit. With Cabela's, the price point for Gore-Tex is affordable.
So the bottom line, at the end of the year, we gear tested a few items with Gore-Tex that we absolutely fell in love with, and now we are like Gore-Tex groupies, and we go around with like, yay, Gore-Tex.
I'm okay with that. Gore-Tex groupie, like I'm actually okay with that.
Right. So in the past, we both had experiences with waterproof items that kind of left us feeling like we were in a rainforest.
Soggy.
Right? Soggy.
Sweaty.
Right. Sweaty. Our raincoats, our hiking boots. This year, we reviewed on other episodes throughout the year two of our favorite products from the year. They were the Rainy River Parkas, his and hers. We both loved them. And then also we both loved our Cabela's branded Gore-Tex hiking shoes. So I'm going to link to the specific ones that we loved and adored this year and that we've talked about. If you are shopping for someone for a raincoat or hiking boots, those are great gifts for the holiday season.
And the men's Rainy River comes in like black, green, and this cool blue color. So you have some nice color choices.
And I like my jewel, that blue jeweled color.
Looks good on you.
Yeah.
Looks sharp on you.
All right.
All right. So we have some RVFTA news. We recently dropped our two big Christmas holiday gift guides. So we did two this year. So we did a Small Business Saturday one, which featured all kinds of cool small businesses and like Etsy shops. And then we did our traditional Christmas gift guide. And we'll link to both of those in the show notes too. All kinds of great suggestions for Christmas and holiday gifts there.
And then if you're still not holiday spectaculared out, we have a Facebook Live coming up.
This thing's going to be crazy. It's kind of out of control. Okay. So Friday, December 8th, 8 p.m. Okay.
Eastern time.
The two of us, Girl Camper Janine Pettit, we're getting together and we're going to recommend some of our greatest gifts of all time for the RV and camping enthusiasts. With props. Props will be eggnog. And there's so many giveaways. Like anyone we asked basically gave us a giveaway. Our sponsors were so generous. We have giveaways from Jellystone, from KOA, from Thetford, from Camp Casual, from Cabela's.
Swag bag from Jayco.
From Jayco, yeah. From Go RVing, from Rova Magazine. I don't even know if we're going to pack all this in.
I know.
And by the way, we need to find a babysitter.
Yeah.
But I told you that was on me.
I said, that's fine to do this. You need to find a sitter. I get so stressed out trying to find
plan,
a sitter.
My plan, I think, is to bring them to the our behind the fence neighbors. We have a pool ladder that goes over our fence.
You're going
to
send them over the fence.
They're just going to send them over the fence on the pool ladder and to buy them pizza and tell them to watch a Christmas movie. And then after the Facebook Live is over, I'll just walk into the backyard and get them.
Get them. All right.
And then I'll offer to take their kids one night. I think it's a fair deal. I hope that works out for you
and all of our listeners.
This is going to be an hour packed with great gift recommendations, and it's going to be packed with giveaways. Mm-hmm. And we have no idea how we're going to give away this stuff yet.
Yes, we do. Don't say that.
Well, Janine had some ideas. Oh, we absolutely do not have a plan for everything. Stephanie hates when we're flying by night.
Well, because we won't by the time that we have this Facebook Live.
Well, yeah, we'll have a plan then, but we don't have a plan now.
I don't.
But we want to make it fun. It's not going to be like follow us on Instagram or follow us on Facebook. I mean, we're going to like do some kind of fun ways for you to win the prizes. And honestly, it probably is like $1,000 worth of prizes at this point.
Oh, more than that. Yeah. The price tag is
it could be more than $1,000.
Because we have one prize that's over $300.
Oh my goodness. The grand prize from Cabela's is sweet.
Yep. You'll want to tune in for that. Okay. So now another thing that you want to join in on is our RVFTA ornament contest we hosted. This is our third annual
RVFTA ornament contest. It's a fan favorite. I mean, people loved it the last 2 years. We had to bring it back, and we upped the prizes this year. All right, so what you're going to do is you're going to post pictures of your camping or RV-themed Christmas ornaments, and you're going to use that hashtag, RVFTA ornaments. We can find them and identify them, and then there'll be three prizes for the three different categories. One is for holiday cheer. Another prize is for the photo that gets the most likes. Mm-hmm. And then the grand prize is the overall best photo.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have a crack team of people that come together to
There's
help
a rubric.
Pick.
We're teachers. We like rubrics.
There's a rubric. And we'll regram some of the best ones over the next few weeks. So use hashtag RVFTA ornament to get
on
the
Instagram.
Fun.
Don't hashtag us on Facebook.
It's Instagram only. I don't think you can use hashtags on Facebook anymore. I think they changed the algorithm or something.
All right, guys. Thank you for for joining us for another episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, and a big thanks to all of our sponsors.
Yeah, big thank you to Jayco, to the Thetford Corporation, to Camp Casual, and to Cabela's, and we will see you all at the campground for a big winter campout. Let's do it.
See you at the campground.